Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nice and refreshed, Nikias. It's almost time to hoop it up. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, now it's time to hoop it up.
It is.
I'm a little rusty.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Like, we can pull the curtain back a little bit. Like, we hit Monday, and it was just like, hey. So, we haven't had any news. It was a weird, like, spaced out schedule on the W side. It's like, hey, do you have anything, like, pressing that you want to hit on? We were both just like, well, not really. You know, we can just kind of wait and see what happens. And so we decided to wait, and we are back now recording on a Thursday afternoon. We got a ton of mailbag questions, still not a ton on the news portion as we've reached a quiet period of like transaction talk at the very least, but lots of mailbag questions. We appreciate everyone that sent those in. And again, if you ever have basketball questions on the NBA or WNBA side, you can email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them. But first, let's dig into some news. We will start on the NBA side, and we'll move to the WNBA side. We'll have an MVP conversation, and then we'll get into some of those mailbag questions. That will be our rundown for today. On the NBA side, Jaylen Brown and the Boston Celtics agreeing to a 5-year Supermax extension. It's 5 years up to $304 million. No player team options there. There is a trade kicker involved in Jaylen Brown's new contract that currently makes him, you know, for the next few months, I guess, the highest paid player in NBA history. I'm intrigued. Steve, your initial thoughts on the Brown deal?
We are a long way from Bob Cousy getting that $25,000 a year, huh?
I mean, they got the same. Yeah, that's a long. Yeah, we are a long ways out from.
Now, the sticker shock was real. I get it. It is a lot of money, and someone always has to go first. So I'm not surprised that there was blowback, but my mind always goes back to the summer of 2016 and how my brain was just confused. And then it just kind of normalized. Like these things kind of end up working themselves out. They smooth themselves out. It was kind of funny to see the why would they do that? I don't know if he deserves that crowd when to get that, you have to do certain things as a player.
Yeah, like he's not all NBA, he's not here. Yeah.
So that part, I'm like, I mean, I get it, but also I can understand if you're Boston, if you look at the run you've had. Well, you made 3 of the last 4 conference finals. You've seen the growth from Jason Tatum. You've seen the growth from Jaylen Brown. Career high scoring year was about 26 a game, 49% shooting on almost 20 shots, career high free throw attempts, assists, rebounds. He did all that while shooting a career low from 3. So it's like, have we seen the best from Jaylen Brown? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. We still have Tatum. Let's lock this in before everything goes bananas. And then see what we can do there. That was my thought. Like I'm never going to blame Boston for taking a look at that and trying to take it as far as they can. What were your initial thoughts?
My initial thought was, one, congratulations to Jaylen Brown. Like, that is a lot of money, which duh. But two, like, as someone that has spoken a ton about his off-court desires and off-court endeavors, like, that just gives him more room to do those things and to try to make an impact in the way that he wants to make the impact. So props to him. Like, he did earn very much a max extension. He was just an all-NBA player. We know what kind of on-ball defender he is. Off-ball gets a little wonky, but when he's locked in, he's very good. Strides offensively. His importance as a driver to this Boston offense can't be undersold. And the fact that he took those steps and, as you said, did not shoot well from 3 for most of the year kind of lends itself to a little bit of upside. Like, okay, if the jumper bounces back or stays consistent throughout the year with the rim pressure that he has, he is improving as a playmaker. He's still below the threshold that you want for like a true number one, but the playmaking is improving. He's still in the stage of getting better, and he's kind of at his athletic peak right now, or you would assume so. Like, I don't think we talk about how quote unquote bad the deal is for another 2 years. I don't think in terms of like earnest conversation about, okay, what can Boston do? They're at the sake of April now. Jaylen Brown's making this, whatever, whatever, especially in light of Jason Tatum being in line for an extension that's going to eclipse that next offseason. So I think a year and a half, 2 years from now is when we have the, hey, what do we do with this Jaylen Brown slot? But we don't have to talk about that right now. We can celebrate the young wing that has turned himself into a bona fide all-star and all-NBA player. So that's where it went first. Two, I won't say that the questions are completely invalid, though. And so I do want to know, okay, what are the steps or what kind of leap will we see from Jaylen Brown next season? Is it just the three-point shot bouncing back? You know, we've kind of hinted at some jokes about the handle and stuff, but like, does the handle get tighter and does the decision-making as a driver get better in a playoff setting? Because I think that's the one thing that's really holding him back from just reaching flat out like superstardom as a wing. Because we know he can score on all three levels. He can get to the free throw line. He can drive. He can shoot. He can make basic reads. If basic reads become above average reads for him, if the turnovers go down, if the shot selection gets better, like he has, again, he averaged 27 without shooting well from three. Like he is a very, but he has the potential to average 30 in a season and could probably do that a couple of times if those things improve. So like, do we see that kind of step from him? And then zooming out again, as Jaylen Brown gets this money, as Jason Tatum's in line to get this money, they just got the Kristaps extension, shorter one, but an extension after trading for him. This feels like the move for Boston before they have to make something drastic, something else drastic happens with their core. And so they are very much in title contention, very much in their title window. But if we don't see those steps from Jaylen Brown this year or next season, those questions are going to get louder. Like, okay, can this Tatum-Brown tandem, as good as they are, and as good as they've been when they've both been on the floor together, can they play off of each other enough to be a true championship duo? And if the answer ends up being no, and again, we got to wait and see how it plays out over the next year or two, then it gets into, okay, what can we do with Jaylen Brown? Where is he at? What kind of trade value will he have on this deal? Can we do something else that fits better around Jason Tatum since he is the franchise guy here? So I think that's kind of where the mind goes from.
No, I understand and respect that. What you said was very interesting. So I guess I'll ask this. What is the one thing you want to see from Jaylen Brown in the next season? What's the most important next leap for him?
I think it's just going to be downhill decision-making. Because while I don't think the handle is the tightest, some of it is just him not reading the floor well before he starts his drive and in the middle of those drives. So if he's able to map things out better, he's obviously quick enough, strong enough. He gets to the rim plenty, even with the questionable handle. So like, I think if he sees the floor better, makes better decisions, you can see those assists perk up, turnovers go down. Boston just has more bites at the apple because they're not turning the ball over. If he becomes a better decision maker, like, I don't think we have as many questions that we have. Like, even the my turn, your turn element of Boston's offense feels better because it's not Tatum takes a jumper, Jaylen Brown might turn it over. And at least they're getting two shots or one shot and someone's getting to the free throw line. You kind of win on those margins in that way.
I think I'm with you there. I think my thing is just for Jaylen Brown to continue to evolve. If he gets to a point where defenses change how they defend him, I think that changes a lot of the math for Boston. Mm-hmm. We saw what happened when Jason Tatum started to get from, hey, you're just a drop to, hey, we need to be at the level to, hey, we need to double, put two on the ball. If Jaylen Brown can also get that attention, I think that opens things up. The key is going to be, how do you make them work together? As you stated, does this become a younger version of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to a degree? Mm-hmm. I think Boston's a little bit ahead of the game there. One, because their guys are younger. I do think there's a wave element that people undersell sometimes where Tatum is involved as an action, goes to the second side, now it's Jaylen Brown in action. I think there's better ways for them to be used together. So I'm interested to see offensively, now that you have the commitment, all that chatter is out the window, at least for now, what do you craft to elevate this duo, as you stated? But I think a lot of it was probably just like, hey, let's just get this done. This is on the list of things we no longer have to worry about. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they make the Porzingis trade if they didn't think Jaylen Brown is also a part of this future. So it's a combination of things there for me.
Yeah, I got you. I think like secondarily for me with the Jaylen thing, I just kind of wonder. What other versatility can they unlock with him offensively? Because I mentioned like a whole bunch of on-ball things and then shooting. Like, is there a minor step he can take as a screener? And does that help him become more viable in like two-man actions with Jason Tatum? Like, can he get better at finding angles so it's not just an auto switch? and things just kind of stay stagnant? Like, can he find room within that to unlock some stuff? Because, again, they are pretty like-sized, or like-sized enough to where you can turn a lot of this stuff into switches. Can he find some nuance as a screener, and does that help? And then just as a general note, with Marcus Smart being traded, like, Jaylen Brown, I felt like, was already Boston's most important driver in a literal sense. That heightens now with Marcus Smart out of there. And so it kind of goes back to my thing. Like, he has to become a better downhill force and better downhill decision maker to really make this pop. And so I'm curious to see what it looks like. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to say, I was a little, I guess I'm just curious to see like how much negotiation really went into this. Because the Supermax is a lot, and there is like a little bit of room between like the 35% Supermax mark and like the 30% mark. And I just wonder if, like, if Boston came to the table with, hey, we'll give you 32.5% of the cap or 33% of the cap. Was that just a non-starter for Jaylen Brown? Like, that was just like a stray thought that I had when the number came out. But beyond that, it's just congratulations to Jaylen Brown. Boston's very good. They have a star tandem. Let's see how they can continue to build this thing out. Let's see what the next year and a half, 2 years looks like.
I want to raise my hand real quick.
Okay.
So I'm trying to look and see. Do you know the list of players who average 26 points and more than 6 rebounds?
I would imagine it's a pretty short list.
It's Zion, Jaylen Brown, LeBron, KD, Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, Giannis, Luka, Joel Embiid.
It's a pretty good list.
I think he's closer to a tier than people may give him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
At times,
he get there. Well, again, we'll see what the decision making looks like. I guess fair to note, just decision making on both ends in light of like the off ball stuff defensively. But he's really freaking good, man. He's really freaking good. Like, I'm not surprised at all that Boston tied him up. Like, they should. Like, you don't let him hit free agency next year. So we will see how that goes. On the W side, on a more somber note, before we get into some more fun stuff. So we talked a little bit earlier about Candace Parker, on an early episode of the pod, rather, about Candace Parker. She was out with an ankle injury, was later designated as an ankle and a foot injury. And then we get the news, a midnight dump of sorts, that Candace Parker is having surgery on her foot and will be out indefinitely. And I was just like, wait a minute. One, I hope she gets, you know, I hope the recovery goes well. I hope she feels better. Two, how did we get here? Three, as you read the press release from the Aces, you also check out Candace Parker's Instagram story when it was initially announced. She's just been playing with a foot fracture the entire season. I was like, well, that's impressive. But then also, why was that the case? And then I go back to impressive because she's playing with a fracture in her foot and still defending at near an all defense level. And it also kind of helps explain some of the, I guess, like lack of juice downhill we saw from her early in the season offensively. And then once the jumper started going, that felt a little bit better. But we just got, the Aces just got like, what, 80, 85% of Candace Parker all year. And she was still very good on balance, which is wild. I just didn't have that one on the bingo card. And so I guess my question to you is like, do you have new thoughts on the Candace thing? Because we talked about her initially when Becky Hammon said she's going to be out a while before we got the surgery update. And we have now got a small sample of games without Candace for the Aces that, you know, they haven't lost yet. Any updated thoughts?
One, it's just unfortunate that Candace Parker's out. Knowing what the move and what the season meant to her, it's tough. I think that probably makes some sense with some of the things we've seen, maybe with the shot, maybe with the drive, as you mentioned. So it's rough. As far as the fracture all year, I mean, I don't know how severe it was at the start, but I've seen guys who, hey, I have this thing that I can't necessarily fix and I can play on it as long as it stays right here. And then it doesn't stay there anymore. it stops being a question of pain management and, hey, this just doesn't work anymore. So, and that part's unfortunate. You know, I wish she didn't have to go through that, but, you know, she's a competitor, a legend for a reason. As far as the Aces go, here's the absurdity of the Aces, right?
Mm-hmm.
I should not be able to say that it doesn't matter. I feel a type of way saying that. That is Candace Parker. I should not utter those words, but I'm there because I don't know if it does. Like, this is where the work that the Aces did pays off. Keith Stokes able to slide right in. Hey, I'll trap these pick and rolls. Do you need screen set? I can move the ball. Hey, I'm Alicia Clark off the bench. Let's go with a smaller lineup, although don't say that to Asia Wilson. I don't know if you caught that Sky game. Hey, so, hey, you guys been going to a smaller lineup. Oh, it's funny you called it small because she's big at heart. And I was like, oh, okay. This is very, very much Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
I'm not the four. I'm not the four. You got it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she can defend multiple positions. You're not taking a hit defensively. And then offensively, it doesn't hurt that Alicia Clark has made 8 of her last 15 threes over the last 5 games. That helps.
Neat. Yeah, that,
I guess my question would be, how deep can they go with the bench? Because I liked what Bell has brought to the table. At the very least, it's more of an opportunity. But is this, does Caitlin George get minutes? Are we just boosting the starters down the stretch? Are there any concerns that are coming with it? Or are the Aces just at the portion of the season where they're a machine?
I think the hope for everyone is that it's more of the latter. I will say, like, the brow kind of raises on the big depth at this point. Because as someone that was, you know, unfamiliar with Kayla George and then watched some films, like, oh, wait, this is going to be fun. I can see how she slots in. And the Kayla George season just has not been great, to be frank about it. You know, Candace goes down. We still haven't seen much of Kayla George in spite of it. So I'm just like, well, OK, what exactly is the backup big situation now? Like, if he is Stokes in foul trouble, if his Asian's in foul trouble, like, it's just Alicia Clark is what it feels like. And some Kirsten Bell. So, like, as far as actual center depth, I think it's fair to raise the brow. And I do think, I guess, like, overall, like, I think I agree with you in terms of, like, okay, they don't have Candace. They just go back to the starting lineup that won them the finals last year with Kia Stokes slotting in. So, like, there hasn't had to be a major adjustment on that portion. But, like, they do miss elements of what Candace brought to the table. Like, there is just generally more mobility defensively with her versus Kia. And then, you know, her ability to grab the board and push and transition herself, Kia doesn't provide that. So, like, you miss certain elements, but, like, wholesale, I'm with you. Like, this is still just a juggernaut. They've won their minutes massively with Kia Stokes on the floor all year long. So that's cool. I think it is worth eyeing the bench, I guess, even more now in light of the other news. No Candace right now. Again, the Kayla George minutes haven't been very plentiful or that great so far. Kirsten Bell has more so been 3-4, more than like sliding all the way down to the 5. So we'll see how she continues to slide in. And with Alicia Clark getting a lot of those minutes at the 4 now, like, you would like to have more wing depth. And I think the Aces would have liked to at some point get Raquana Williams in to provide some of the wing depth. But it's fair to say that she will not be returning anytime soon, if at all. I will post the, like I say, the quick, very, very quick disclaimer, like a trigger warning with domestic violence. So if you would like to skip ahead in the podcast, you are very much well within your right to do so. But Aces guard / wing Raquana Williams was arrested Wednesday morning. She's now facing 9 domestic battery charges, 5 felony charges, including 3 counts of strangulation, coercion with the threat or use of physical force, and assault with use of a deadly weapon. It is not good, which is very dull analysis. But she's been barred from all team activities as the Aces and the league as a whole investigates what's going on. It's just unfortunate, to say the least. I hope that the victim is okay. According to the initial report that came out, I think it was the Las Vegas Review-Journal, reported that Raquana's spouse has moved from Las Vegas. And so I hope she's able to get the help and the support that she needs. But beyond it, I guess just very quickly through the Aces lens, like, they're just not going to have Raquana Williams this year. It does not appear to be the case, nor should they, assuming these allegations are true. So we will see what kind of moves are made, again, in light of Candace's injury. And again, I don't think Raquana's just going to be there. So we'll see what the Aces try to do in terms of, like, 7-day hardship contracts. They had Ashley Jones. That deal expired. I think she's going to get a second one. I think that was Rachel Galligan that tweeted that out yesterday, that she's expected to get a second 7-day contract. We'll see if the Aces try to target another big or another wing on top of that, assuming Raquana's just gone. But just an unfortunate news week for the Aces. in regards to their roster. So we will keep an eye and keep an eye on things and see how that continues to progress. Did you have any Aces thoughts before moving to the next portion?
Very unfortunate. I send all prayers. I'd hope that we can just be better to each other.
Yeah.
With our time on this earth. There's just no room for that. Shouldn't treat people that way.
Yeah. It's not cool. And we all just collectively just have to be better. Not an easy way to transition from something like that, but we will do our best. A question about the MVP for you. Because we recently did an awards episode about a week and a half ago. We've got some post All-Star break games in. Has your top five changed at all?
My top five has solidified, Nikias.
Okay.
I'm doubling down. Ulrike is definitely number five to me.
Okay.
Just too important to the Wings for me. I'm all in. I'm a little disappointed that they can't transfer two on the ball into anything other than they have. Like, I feel like there's opportunity there, but she's too good. The space, the weight she has to carry on ball, off ball, the effort defensively. I've liked what I've seen. Asia Wilson is making it extremely tough to not put her as the MVP because I feel like she has had, 20 and 10 and shooting 60% for like 19 games in a row. I know that's not factually accurate, but goodness gracious. I mean, I think she had a sequence against the Sky where she showed on a screen, recovered, contested, got a steal, pushed it in fast break, and got an assist. And I was like, buddy, I don't. Ooh.
Yeah. Can I very quick, before you continue, because I'm with you, can I very quickly cut in with her last three games?
Yes.
Or
yes,
three games post All-Star break. 23-15 with six stocks. So three steals and three blocks. After that, 35-14 with three steals. After that, the Sky game, which you referenced, 24 points, four boards, uncharacteristic. She's been an elite rebounder all year long. Four assists, three steals and four blocks. 16 steals plus blocks in three games for Asia Wilson, in addition to shooting 60% from the field against Seattle, 82% from the field against Minnesota, which tied Lisa Leslie's record for highest field goal percentage in a game in which you've taken at least 17 shots. And then 64% from the field against Chicago. Asia's been great all year long, so I don't want to act like she hasn't been. But it feels like a switch has just flipped for her on both ends of the floor. It is kind of hard not to have her number one at this rate. Continue.
Oh, no, she's like the 97 overall who has like a 2% morale boost, is on a hot streak. It's like, what do I do? And now it's become like not, I don't want to say Jokic and Embiid adjacent, but almost a reverse in the sense that I had Jokic there midway through.
Mm-hmm.
I had Embiid. I was close to Embiid, but Jokic had literally done everything that he was supposed to do for me to consider him to be the MVP at that point. Eventually, mm-hmm. I went back to Embiid. Asia is doing every single thing that you would need her to do for her to get another MVP.
Yeah.
Our team is very, very good. I am also very, very good on both ends of the floor. And it's like, okay, I'm reaching the point of, okay, what's the case against Asia?
It just feels like at this point, like the case against her is just like the other two players that we've had in our top three is different orders, of course. But the other two players, Breonna Stewart and Alyssa Thomas, have been required to carry more of a load on both ends and kind of centralize things, especially as like ball handlers in a way that Asia hasn't. Like, in depending on how you prioritize that portion of it, like more so playmaking for Alyssa and just like outside in creation for Breonna Stewart. Depending on how y'all prioritize that, like that's where you can have either of those two above Asia. But like, impact on both ends, she's up there with both of them. And then once you factor in off, like she's up there with both of them. Defensively, I think it's fair. Like, as someone that had Asia behind, like, eight, like I still probably have Alyssa Thomas as my defensive player of the year right now. But, like, she's right there. It's difficult to deny her. Like, she is quite literally on the most dominant team in W history. And she has been firmly the best player on that team on both ends of the floor. It is wild what she is putting together.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
That may tap into a rant.
Okay.
You did not have Jackie in your top five, or did you?
I had Jackie five.
Five, okay.
Yeah, I had cool. Jackie five, yeah.
Who would be six to you in a hypothetical world? Let's say there's six. Who's six?
Six for me is probably Fee.
Okay.
So if I remember correctly, when we talked about this, I had Alyssa, Stewie, Asia. I had Satu. That's like my Wings representative. And then Jackie. So I guess six would probably be Fee for everything she's having to ask. Like, it's just hard to have her top five with a team under 500. But just in terms of literal, we cannot function without her on the floor. And this to her just being really good. Like, it's probably Fee at six. Who would you have?
I was just thinking. I was trying to see who could be a sixth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's, who else would be in the conversation? Since I like the conversation way more than most people do. Like, I get fun out of ranking who might be there.
Yeah.
There's Fee. I don't think that the Sparks aren't good enough for NECA.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, that slide. What did they lose? Like, eight in a row before finally snapping? Yeah, like, that just took NECA out of, like, fringe MVP discussions. I guess still keep an eye on the all-W discussion for her because she's been that good, but yeah, it gets tough.
Do we keep an eye on Ka, Ryan Howard? Do they have to make a run and their teams have to make a run?
I think it's the and their team has to make a run, especially for Ka, because like the Dream went on the run pre-All-Star break and then continued to post-All-Star break in light of like lineup shenanigans and stuff. And then they just beat the Mercury. So, like, the Dream are going to be high enough in the standings to where if Ryan continues her elite level of play, then she has, like, she's going to have a case for five, for sure.
Okay. And then my secondary question, is it time to knock on the door for DaJuana Bonner on an all-W team?
It's time... I am fine with the conversation being had because DaJuana has been very good this season. I think what kind of holds it back for her, like, I think going positionless makes it tougher for her in a way.
Mm.
Because if it was just she's one of the four forwards, like, you could start make arguments about her being like that fourth forward, which also blends into the, what are we considering Asia this year? But again, that's just, you know, how I get about stuff like that.
Oh,
but like,
brother!
Don't you think? I'm just saying, she's been at the four all year. But anyway, but with it being positionless, that's just going to open it up for more guards or just more bigs, wherever the positional density lands. And so like that may make it tougher for DaJuana, but no, she's been very good. Like the three-point efficiency isn't where you would think it is, but you factor in the type of shots that she takes and how far she takes them out. The percentage starts to make a little bit more sense. The drives have hit. She's been good defensively all year long. That Sun team continues to win at a high level. She should be on your short list, even if she doesn't ultimately make it. I think she should be a short list candidate for sure.
And while we're here.
Okay.
The Minnesota Lynx are 2.5 games out of the 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
If the Minnesota Lynx get that 5 seed, and Diamond Miller, who over the last 3 games is averaging 17, shooting well, assists are up, could she take the Rookie of the Year? For context, like, folks, while Nikias thinks, we're going to do a little throwback for the dunkers. Let me talk to you. There was a time where Nikias was very, very heavy on... Who were you heavy for on Rookie of the Year? It was Evan Mobley, right?
It was Evan Mobley, yeah.
It was Evan Mobley all year long. All year long, Nikias was on Evan Mobley. We sit down to record this very podcast. We clip this button. We're talking through our fictional awards. This man hits me with Scotty Barnes. I'm asking this. Do I need to mentally prepare for the pause? Diamond Miller's just been so great.
I mean, she has been so great. But no, oh man, the Scotty year was so funny, dog. Cause like he was good, but he felt like very firm number two for me. And Evan was just there. It's like, well, this guy's making a little bit of a jump post All-Star break. He's had more creation responsibility than Evan did, or whatever. And like that probably just hasn't aged well, honestly. I mean, it's year two, so like it's not fair to say that either. But like that that switch probably hadn't aged well. But like, yeah, it was one of those late season surges that got me. With Diamond, though, I feel like we talked about this a little bit in one of our watch parties where I was like, hey, what would it take for her to kind of eclipse what Aaliyah's doing? And I think we landed on like she'd have to average north of 20. The Lynx would have to win. The Fever had to continue to slide and or like Aaliyah misses time. Aaliyah hasn't missed time. She's still been very good. She hasn't been, you know, like that 5 or 6 game stretch right before the All-Star break where it's like, oh, shoot, she's just averaging 20 and 10 now. Wait a minute. So like Aaliyah hasn't been back to that. And the Fever just lose every close game in existence. Like, that's not Aaliyah's fault, per se. But like, in light of what Diamond is doing as a scorer, as a budding playmaker, a little more quietly, just what she's doing as a defender. Like, I think from an impact perspective, like, Aaliyah's been better. She's been more impactful. But Diamond is holding her own across multiple positions. That's been fun. I think, like, this feels very less Mobley and Barnes and more like Paolo and Jalen Williams in a way. To where it's like Diamond doesn't have the same responsibility as Aaliyah, who you could just argue like she's just the best player on the team. While Diamond is playing off of an MVP talent at the very least. But like deficiency might be there. Like she's going to be a part of more wins. The Lynx look like they are just going, they could very well just make the playoffs. And I don't think that's going to be the Fever's portion at this stage. Though, they're what? 3 games out of 8 right now? But like a good week would just get them right back at 8. Like that just kind of speaks to what the bottom of the league has been. Mm-hmm. Just that 7 through 11 range. Sorry, Seattle. I will say like I wouldn't completely rule it out. I would still lean towards like Aaliyah's just the favorite. And then once you factor in, like Diamond's playing well, but Diamond did just miss a bunch of time. Like it would take like a really, it would take an extended surge from Diamond. Like this 17 would have to remain the 17. And again, they'll probably have to be higher than that in terms of scoring for her to really make the push. I think what happens in rookie of the year cases on both sides is like, okay, you get this initial punch. Oh, this is just rookie of the year. And it takes a lot to like change the mind of like the collective. If you are just that firm in what you saw in the first 10, 15, 20, I think the 40 game season helps Diamond in this case. There's just going to be more chances to see her drive all over the place like she was in the Washington game last night. So I would just say like, keep your mind open. I still lean Aaliyah though. How close is the race for you?
It's still Aaliyah for me, but I can see it. Mm-hmm. I can see it, especially if Diamond Miller continues to play like this. Like everything is just popping. The three is there. The pull-up is there. The reads are there. The drives are there. Like it's just clicking in a way, and the links are moving in the right direction. Yeah. And that's a tough combination. It's nothing against Aaliyah Boston. Again, Aaliyah Boston All-Star has been tremendous.
Yeah.
I figured I'd ask that question because it's funny because I kind of thought, this kind of feels the same.
Yeah, like she's really making the push. And I've just enjoyed watching the Lynx when they're healthy. Also, on the Lynx note, welcome back Jessica Shepherd, mm-hmm. who's just been out for a month and a half with an illness, non-COVID illness. I don't know if it's the exact same illness that like Lexi Brown was out with. They both got the non-COVID illness designation. So like in that regard, they were similar and they missed a bunch of time. I don't know if it's the exact same thing. Not going to put that out there because I don't know. But it was just nice to see her back on the court. Just screening and slinging passes all over the place, getting some offensive support. Like, welcome back Jessica Shepherd. That is a really good player. I enjoy watching her play. I guess very quickly back to the MVP thing. I feel like, honestly, I'm probably ready to put Asia back at one, or to put her at one, rather.
I see what we're doing here.
It just feels like the math is just mounting. Because, like, you know, we got plenty of podcast episode history where I'm like, you know, Asia's been great defensively. I don't feel like she's at the same level that she was last year, et cetera. She's fairly firmly erased that over the last over the last few games. And it's like, oh, and now she has a little bit more responsibility. Like, Kia Stokes has been great defensively still. But, like, again, the mobility isn't the same. And I think as teams have tried to go more empty corner against Asia and having her at the level, her just timing out these deflections and steals with the back line just not being peeled in as you would traditionally expect, she is carrying a lot of the load defensively still. And her level has improved on that guard. And, like, if she's back to genuine, like, not just all defense level, she's just at DPOY level again on top of the offense and the efficiency and just how important she is as a driver, as an end-the-clock, our actions didn't work, create something, tough shot maker. Yeah, like, I'd be cool with, like, sliding. Like, it'd be by, like, a shoulder or something. Wouldn't be anything egregious. But, like, I would be fine with, like, sliding her above Alyssa Thomas for one right now.
And thus the Stewie has fallen to 3 on Nikias' list. We'll stay tuned and see how far the fall continues.
Which is wild because not even anything like Stewie's done in particular. Like, I feel like there's been like a little bit of like post All-Star break slippage, but she's still been really good. It's more so about, oh, Asia has just been this versus Stewie's played bad or something. And, like, you look, quick look at the W standings, like, the Liberty and the Sun are both on 3-game winning streaks. They essentially have the same record right now. So, like, it's not even, again, anything crazy. But no, like, I think Asia has just been even more phenomenal than you expect her to, which is a hard thing to do. It's hard to set the bar that high and eclipse it. But she's been on such a tear, and this Aces team is so historic. It's hard not to have her up there. It's hard not to have her up there. Any other award thoughts before you transition to the mailbag? Because we got some fun ones in here.
We can go to the mailbag, man.
Okay. Well, then, we will transition to the mailbag. And I'll once again say thank you to those who have sent in questions throughout the week. Again, you don't have to wait for a special, here's a tweet, mailbag episode coming. Send in questions. Like, whenever you have a basketball thought, send them in. We will get to them for a traditional mailbag episode or just when we want to answer some stuff. We got some time at the end of the pod. The email is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. So again, don't hesitate to send those in. We will get to them. We will start with, oh, go ahead.
Hey, this is the perfect time to send them in. It is August.
Yeah.
Let it fly.
And like Steve and I joke about this all the time. Like as we, obviously the NBA season is done, summer league's done, whatever. We shift straight to the W. And it's like, well, you know, we typically, when we do team deep dives, we go pretty deep. And, like, there are only 12 teams. So, like, once we make a big point or major points about the teams, it's like, ah, well, now we just got to wait a little bit for updates. See what's going on. So, like, if you have basketball questions, this is the perfect time to fill them in. Because, you know, we don't want to just repeat. Well, the Wings are great if they don't turn the ball over. And the Liberty are great when they have their tempo at the half court and they move the ball. And the Aces are a juggernaut. And we don't know what's going on with the Sparks. And, you know, so to avoid the reruns, you know, send in some questions. We here. We are here.
Hey, this man rolling. Said, take us out of syndication.
Help us pay our bills. No. So anyway, first trio of questions going to come from Ian, who says, hi, Stephen Nikias. My name is Ian Harwood, and I have an interest in working in an NBA front office one day, basketball officer scouting after college. I am a relatively young fan, 19 years old, and have been watching it for around 7 years. Props to you. But I want to learn as much as possible about the on-court product. So we got 3 questions, Steve. Number one.
Okay.
What are some of the things you guys look at when evaluating what a particular scheme on-court is and how effective it is?
Number one, great question, Ian. I think you got a few for us. I put the whole government name out there. So one's up for you. name that we'll never forget. Remember me when you make it. Also, we got 19-year-old listeners, huh?
Yeah. We got young people that want to, like, follow basketball for basketball. That's fire.
You'd love to see that. As that first question is very fun, and there's levels to this. And no, that's not a stunt. It's just how I tend to view it sometimes.
Big ball?
It's all a buildup. Like, for me, if you're looking at like a particular scheme, I assume we're talking defense here, right?
That's where I took it first because that just felt easier to explain. But, like, I would imagine it counts for either end.
Yeah. So I took the defense first as well. I'm always looking at the first level the screen, who's involved in it, the person defending the ball, and the person defending the screener. The person defending the screener is going to give me the window of knowledge I need. What are they doing? What's their position? What are they trying to do? Are they late on the screen? You know what I mean? If we're talking about just understanding what a scheme is, literally, what's the positioning? And then if you look at the ball handler, whoever's defending the ball, they're going to give you a window as well. Are they getting into the body and fighting over? Are they forcing it one way each time? Are they keeping on the side? Are they sliding under? That's where you're going to start to understand what's going on. The second level is also going to show you some things. Is that help going to be in early, or are they going to stay at home? That's going to tell you what they're willing to give up. Now, the how effective it is part, that's where it gets very tricky, because we've seen some really, really good defense. Offense still scores. We've seen some defense where now you're getting stops or you hold on. We've seen an attempt, a game plan where, hey, this is what we want to do. And you can understand the vision of what they're trying to do. Hey, we're trying to protect the paint. We're trying to take this away. The problem is you just can't do it enough times for it to work, for you to win. So that's where I can understand where defense becomes a little subjective. But the easiest way to understand it is, what are they trying to take away, and what are they willing to give up? Because this is an important part of defense. Like, you're not going to take everything away, and it's going to change depending on who it is. But if we're talking purely the scheme, that's just going to be, you're going to see it right away. You're going to see it more and more. And the tricky part is now understanding, okay, why are they using this scheme now? Who are they using this scheme against? Why is this? You know what I mean? Because, yeah, our base may be drop. Hey, that's Stephen Curry. I'm going to come a little bit closer to the screen. But, you know, I point to Milwaukee. They still would keep the same principles. Brook might come up a little higher, but hey, as soon as we're good, I'm going backwards. You know what I mean? So it's just little nuances like that, but it's a buildup on those. What say you, Nikai?
Well, you pretty much two-stepped all over my notes for this question, so I don't have too much to add on this. But no, I had like it's parsing through what the scheme is and ultimately what they're trying to accomplish. So, like, you go to defense. If you are looking at a defense that's more aggressive or that's putting two on the ball, it's like, okay, naturally you are trying to prevent the ball handler from getting loose. You're trying to force the ball out of their hands in some kind of way. Ultimately, you want to force a turnover, but you want to make sure they can't turn the corner, they can't get in the pull-ups, they can't get downhill, etc. And then from there, it's trying to figure out what the nuances are. Like, are they doing this, if you are a two-to-the-ball team, are you doing this against every ball handler that runs a ball screen? Or is it just top of the food chain or pull-up shooter X? Like, what is the nuance and when you're trying to do that? And you kind of touched on that with Brook Lopez. Like, our base may be dropped, but we may come higher against this guy versus this guy. And, like, what kind of nuance is in there? And then from there, like, depending on how often you're watching a specific team or something, it's like, okay, like, how deep are they going with the nuance with this? Are they only running this scheme on certain sides of the floor? And from there, like, if you're putting two to the ball, who's responsible for tagging the roll? Does that change based on who that person is guarding? Does it change based on which side the guy is screening to? Or do you always want to come from this specific guy in the corner because he's really good at it or something like that? Like, just trying to figure out the details there, that takes a little bit more watching. But, like, those are the kind of nuances that I'm looking for.
And this is the fun part of doing the pod and how my brain works, where if we have conversations, I just travel to a place and start to think things. Mm-hmm. I go back, you know, you said it was 19. I go back to when I started out in the video room. And I had played in college, so I'm familiar with basketball. But at the same time, you got to learn it. Okay. Every side pick and roll, we're keeping it on the side. Oh, why are we doing that? What's the rotation behind that? What are we trying to, like, defend? What's our weak spot? Where's our weak link?
Yeah.
And it's more of just repetition. You'll start to notice it more and more and more. And I would just say, take note of it. Like, okay, this is where they're at here. Oh, they're doing it again. Oh, they're doing it again. That's how you'll start to pick up on stuff.
He bounced it. He bounced it again. He bounced it again. He bounced it again.
No bond.
Fair enough. I thought it was a good shot. All right. Oh, wait, did you have more? I just threw in the joke. But yeah.
No. What else you got?
Oh, okay. Second question from Ian. What are some of you guys' favorite resources for learning more about the game and the specific nuances? I will take this one first. The first answer is the easy answer. Steve. Like, I have simply learned more about basketball the last few years from Steve than just about anyone. So, like, that is a very easy, like, yeah, let me ask him some questions. Let me check his timeline, et cetera, et cetera. So we start there.
I'm going to start sending invoices.
I see what we're on. Okay. But anyway, beyond that, like, listening to or reading, like, you know, Zach Lowe's been a big influence. Caitlin Cooper remains elite, and it is a blessing that she's even in the public space at all, considering her knowledge. See, Half Court Hoops is really good on Twitter and YouTube. Bowser to Bowser on Twitter, also very good if you're trying to get specific player action names, and also has like a basketball dictionary site on Medium, I want to say, that digs into this stuff with diagrams and video examples and stuff. So if you're trying to get into like play names and action names and stuff like that and get download that, that's also a really good resource that I've enjoyed using over the past few years. Steve, what say you?
I see why you said me first. I feel like I got the Sabrina interview at the All-Star game.
What the? What the?
Lucky to be in there. All right. No, I'm kidding. For me, it's, I like overall conversation. The film is always going to be number one for me. I like looking for stats, but I like reading and getting different perspectives and seeing, mm-hmm. hey, what do these people think about it? What do the beat writers think? What are the coaches saying? What are the players talking about? You know, I take, fans make you think sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it's a lot of yelling, it's a lot of noise, but sometimes they may have a thought or perspective about a team they watch all the time that maybe you didn't think about. Mm-hmm. And now that's something you can put in the back of your mind for your eye to be like, okay, this may be what they're trying to do, or this is something they've struggled with. And that's not really a concern, you know, that type of deal. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always just trying to open up as many thought bubbles as possible. Because I think with basketball, it's very subjective. The beauty is in the gray. But it can get really groupthinky at times. Mm-hmm. And so my thought is always challenge myself to, okay, I think this. Is this true? And keep asking questions. Mm-hmm. I hope I answered that. I don't know.
No, I think that's good. I would just say you brought up stats that has unlocked the portion of my brain. Like, oh, right, I do like look at numbers and stuff too. Like cleaning the glass is very good, very, very important stat site for me. PvP stats also very important for me. If you can gain either synergy or second spectrum access, God bless you. That is very much not public and also very much just not cost effective. So, like, you know, don't put that on your.
The hashtag is big time, folks. No,
the hashtag is big broke. What do you mean? But, so I'm just saying, if you know someone that was like, hey, what does this player do against this? And they will send that to you, then you thank the good heavens for like a synergy or a second spectrum. But like in the public space, like cleaning the glass, PvP stats, like B-ball index is also very good if you're trying to get into more granular, like individual skill sets and how that stuff's kind of tracked. And then naturally, like you can just do your base queries on like Basketball Reference or NBA.com or WNBA.com. Positive Residual also has a site for some advanced stuff. You can get that on the W side. I've enjoyed using that over the last year or so as I've gotten deeper into the numbers portion on the W side. So they're also very good. I'm trying to make sure I'm not missing anything or anyone. If I think of anything else, I just try to mention it on my timeline or on the next pod. But that's kind of where my mind goes early. And then third question for Ian, and then we'll move to another question. How do you guys pay attention to everything happening on the court? I often find myself fixating on something and missing what else is going on, whether off or on the ball, on defense or offense. Was wondering if you guys had any advice on the matter.
Keep watching film. It's going to come. Mm-hmm. If your mind is fixating on things, that's a positive sign. Now, what I would tell you is it's going to keep, like, you're going to start to notice more things outside of the one thing you're looking. Now, I would say if you're going into a game looking for a specific thing, you will only see that specific thing. Like, it's just, that's just the human mind. Like, if I want to turn on, you know, Bulls tape and be like, hey, what did Andre Drummond do as a defender? I'm probably only going to be looking at him on defense. You know what I mean? So it changes and ebbs and flows. Now, if we're talking live, find your focus point. Your eye will develop. Don't follow the ball. Your eye will always find the ball. Your eye will always see where it is. Mm-hmm. And I did this for live purposes. So I put some tape on the screen real quick. So I'm looking to see, okay, how do I regenerate where I was with my brain? Mm-hmm. So you just have to notice, okay, what's the pattern? Where are they standing? Why are they standing there? What's the purpose? What's the defense doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for me, it's absorbing different parts of the game at different times. So if you're bringing the ball up, I have stopped looking at you. I'm now looking as the camera pans to what's the setup here. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you're going to come back into my view or you're going to do something and pass the ball. And now we keep moving. But OK, where are they moving? What's the first action? Oh, this is what happened. It's a drive, blown closeout. Like it's a buildup where you'll start to notice things. I'm stuttering through it because it's hard. I feel like player who was good, who was unable to coach because they were just good.
I don't know, man. I just did it. No. Oh, man.
Well, so what say you, man? I'm sure what you say will spark something within me.
Ah, man. I say for me, like the comfort has just come from one, just watching a bunch of film. Like that's going to be your foundation. Like you just have to watch a bunch of games. And then for me, if we're going into like, it's not just for pick and roll, but I would say pick and roll since that's the easiest way to kind of branch off of. But like, there are only a few things that a pick and roll ball handler is going to do when you really think about it. Like they're going to pull up, they're going to step, basically they're going to shoot, you know, pull up, step back, whatever. They're going to drive or they're going to pass the ball. And so from there, it's just like, all right, if I know you got the ball and I see you calling for a screen or the action calls for a screen. All right, you're only doing certain things. So I don't really have to watch and see what you do. I want to see how everyone else is reacting, kind of bouncing off what you said. And so then once you think about the other end, like, okay, if this guy's running pick and roll, say it's Trae Young in Atlanta. Or let's say it's Steph. We know he's going to get two to the ball. I know defensively, like, they're probably going to switch so they can flatten stuff out, or they're going to put some guy at the level. So Steph just can't get a pull up. And so with those two things in mind, it's like, all right, cool. What's the back end doing? What is the back end doing defensively? And then offensively, what are the spacers doing? Are they staying static so the reads are easier? Do we have a guy in the corner that's now lifting up to the wing because they know where the help is coming from with this guy at the level and this guy's peel again, et cetera, et cetera. It all just kind of branches from there. But it's just kind of recognizing the ball handler can only do so much. And then going back to Steve's earlier answer about pick and roll defense, like the ball handler defender, he's going to shade him to a certain direction. He's going to duck under. He's going to fight over. He may switch. The big man defender is going to be at the level or in a drop or prepared to switch, whatever case may be. If I know what those two are trying to accomplish, my eyes go to the other three. And then offensively, you know, ball handler has it. I don't really have to worry about him. Someone is screening for him. I saw Steph call him up or whatever. I don't really have to worry about you. You are going to roll or you are going to pop or you're going to set up for a rescreen. Like you're just trying to limit the decision-making tree in your head. And I think that's how you're easy to move your eyes elsewhere quicker. And like the deeper you get into watch, it's like, all right, well, I know. And then you get into, okay, I know who this player is. And this is what this player likes. I know this screener. I know he likes to slip versus set the hard one and wait. And so once you get the recognition of like who these players are, then it gets even easier to, okay, these two are involved in action. I know how they like to handle it. This is what the defense is trying to do. What the back end doing? What are the spacers doing? And then you kind of move from there.
No, yeah. I would say basically it's going to feel like a checklist as you keep watching. It's going to feel more and more like a checklist as you keep watching because you'll start to get the cadence for, okay, ball's coming up. What action are they running? Oh, going to be a down screen. Okay, let's check the defense. You know what I mean? Because as your mind starts to check things off, you look for the next thing. I think that's the biggest thing. So just give it time. Keep watching. Keep hooping it up.
Keep hooping it up. The brand stays the brand stays the brand. Next one going to come from Kevin. If you could suggest one rule change for the WNBA, what would it be?
Prioritization. Let's say you.
Prioritization is a good one. Like, I guess this is more of like a structural CBA thing, but like, I just want expanded roster spots / a loosening of the hard cap, which I think would make it easier to expand the roster spots. So whichever one would help the other happen first is kind of where I land. The league is just very talented. And then in light of like injuries and suspensions and all that good stuff, like, you can only have up to 12, but then most teams carry 11. And then once you get into 10, you got the hardships. And then the hardship rules are also complicated. And Neko Gumake talked about this at All-Star, about how that affects the cap numbers and stuff like that. If we could just go from 12 to 14, I think the league would just be in a much better spot. Get more players in the program. I think substituting players in for, you know, if they get hurt or they're going overseas for something, like we saw with Hanzu and stuff. Like, it just makes it easier to keep the chain moving for teams and stuff. So that would be where I would go before I get into, like, I don't know. Like, you know my thing about the kickball violation or, like, shot clock violations and change of position, stuff like that. Like, before I even get to that stuff, it's more so structurally, can we get more roster spots in the W and or, like, loosen the hard cap so you can bring your own players back or whatever the case may be. So I think that's where I would go. We got a couple of questions from Rob. The first one. In a previous episode, both of you had the same players in the top three for WNBA MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. Could that happen in the NBA?
Well, I like that question. I will say, like, there's a Jokic joke in here somewhere, isn't there?
Yes.
Could it happen? Yes. I don't think it's likely. Mainly because I think with the amount of defenders there are, and I think there's more of an appreciation for certain defenders than there used to be. Mm-hmm. I don't know if those people are just going to go away. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, We know Evan Mobley's going to be in the conversation for a long time. Jaren Jackson Jr., Brooke Lopez, Marcus Smart exists, Drew Holiday, Bam, OG, Crusoe. Those guys are going to, Herb Jones. Like, there's going to be those type of players who do that at such an elite level in a loud way, and They're going to get recognized for it more and more. It's going to make it tough for the crossover, I think. Because the wings, to a degree, either haven't hit that defensive level or they're past that defensive level to a degree. Not to say they're bad at defense now, but like, What would Kawhi Leonard have to do to be a defensive player of the year? Don't say play basketball.
Well, with a 65 game minimum, he's got to, you know. Oh, but no, I think for me, like, I'm with you. Like, I think just, and we have had many nuanced conversations about Nikola Jokic defensively. Like, listen to our old episodes. Okay. But I think Jokic's existence just kind of puts a big wrench into the top three in MVP and D4 because it's like, unless Jokic just plays 62 games in a season, Then he's just going to be top three in MVP. Like, I don't see a world in which he just doesn't do that. And so if you do add in the context of, okay, maybe Jokic twisted an ankle, they were conservative with it because they want him healthy for the playoffs. He plays 57 games, whatever. He's just ineligible. Would I be super surprised if we had, like, in some order, Giannis, Embiid, KD as, like, your top three in MVP?
Now,
oh, go ahead.
KD's an excellent example. And my question to you was going to be, what would the third be for you? Because I was like, this has to be some combination of Giannis and Embiid.
Yeah.
That's who's number three.
Yeah. And that's where I'll throw back to, like, KD, where it was either last year before he went down or the year before last, where we were, like, talking about, like, KD's an all-defensive second team selection. And again, like, the threshold still has to be higher for him to get to DPOY. We're talking about all defensive second team. But I remember there was a time I had him, like, on the second team for my fictional ballot or whatever. So, like, there exists a world in which, you know, Phoenix with all their offseason moves, you know, whatever bounce back we get from Aiden, whatever, if they're just a switch-heavy defense and KD is swatting shots on the back end, he's guarding a bunch of different dudes, and Phoenix, we think they need to be, like, 17th in defense. They're, like, 8th. And it's like, huh. KD's averaging 1.2 steals, 1.9 blocks. Opposing players are shooting 43.4% at the rim when challenged by KD. Pick and rolls defended by KD, you're generating 0.87 points per possession. You get into second spectrum stuff. Like, are any of those things, like, out of the question? No. Like, I'm not going to put money on that. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if KD had that kind of season, if he's able to stay healthy enough. And then Giannis and Embiid, the cases kind of right themselves for the offensive and defense impact. So, like, that could be a potential top three. Or if we just get full tilt defense Jason Tatum, for, like, a full season, because he is, you know, say full tilt, he's one of the best off-ball defenders in the sport and can defend a bunch of different dudes and stuff like that. So do we get the 39-6 season from Jason Tatum where he's that defensively? I wouldn't rule it out. Like, again, that's not my bet. But, like, I think those will kind of be the only ones. And then moving forward, you just keep an eye on Wimby. Like, do we get a Giannis Embiid Wimby season? Like, within the next 3 years, where they're still, like, kind of aging out of their peak. We're still, like, prime level. with Embiid and Giannis. And then Wimby's just going into, he is Wimby, and he lives up to the hype. That's a top three that I could see. I found it hard for like a guard, like a true guard, to get into that conversation.
Well, that's the other part with the MVP thing. There's going to be so many of these guards. And this is no disrespect, but Donovan Mitchell, Stephen Curry, Ja, Luka, De'Aaron Fox, Jalen Brunson. I don't know if they're going to go in both buckets.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Could a Heat make that leap?
I find it hard to see.
It would take an insane leap offensively, consistency-wise, from a Bam or a Jimmy.
Yeah, but like those would also be like the dark horse. Yeah.
And I'm just trying to build a list here.
No, I got you.
Anthony Davis, question mark?
That's the other, like, I feel like that would be like the popular third listed there. I just don't know if I see the offense at this stage. Like, he would just have to have, like the jumper would just have to be there in the way that the bubble was. And, like, with LeBron kind of aging out and stuff, like, he just takes on more of the offensive responsibility. Like, we go back to the New Orleans 28-12-3 with still and a half, 2.5 blocks, whatever. Sure, but, like, he would have to do that for 65 games, and the Lakers would have to win. And, again, the jumper. And, like, I don't know.
Hey, it's kind of been a while since you got an MVP. Hold on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And like,
dang, I was doing some clicking intensified. Now I got back to 2019-20.
Yeah. And like, quiet as kept. AD turns 31 in March, which isn't old, but it's like, it feels like we're not that far off from like the New Orleans era where he was just insane. He might be 31. So,
that might be the one, man. Yeah, I think we've explored it.
Yeah, I think that.
We're going to get yelled at by someone like, how dare you leave this person off the list?
What about Anthony Edwards? Like, no. He's going to. No. Okay. And the second question, if I can get back to the to the document. Should the W look to go to 48 minutes per game versus the 40 that they're on now? Just no.
No. Absolutely okay. Not. I love the 40 a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's great pace, great tempo. The games fly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a need to change it.
I got you. Like, that was my answer, too. I mean, the no was my answer. And now I was like, okay, wait, why do I feel this way? Like, what's the actual, I guess, the argument against extending it? We got a question. I guess that would probably just tie back into, like, roster spots and availability and stuff like that. As the load goes on, and then as the schedule, you know, just increase from 36 to 40, I would imagine maybe not next year because there's the Olympic break, but like the year after, I would imagine the W would like to get to like 44 games or 45 or 50 or something like that. Like maybe that's where it becomes like a cumulative wear on body type thing where they don't have the roster / team expansion in place yet. Maybe that becomes an issue. But like I do enjoy the 40 minute game. Like for me, my bigger thing, which is, you know, the women's and men's basketball crossover. Like, I just want four quarters. Mm. I still do not understand why men's college basketball is two halves versus four quarters. Like, that just doesn't compute to me. And I guess now that I'm thinking through it live, and maybe there's a very obvious answer to this and I'm just stupid, but like, why is the men's game in college, it's 40 minutes, and then you go to the 48 in the NBA? Like, why would you not just have two 24-minute halves? Or four 12-minute quarters on the college side, since that translation is direct. And again, like, there may just be an obvious answer I'm not aware of, but, like, I genuinely do want to know, like, why do we not just have, like, it makes sense for them to go to quarters, and also if they go to quarters, they should also just have the 12 minutes?
Well, I did a quick Google search.
Okay.
It appears that originally there were two 15-minute halves, and that wasn't enough to compete and get buckets, get the peach in the bowl. So to speak. So they adjusted two 20-minute halves. Now, I believe in 1951, the NCAA did have four 10-minute quarters.
Huh.
But they went back and the league was like, nah. And that's history.
That's just it. So the answer to why we don't have quarters is because we said so? That's all. What kind of shenanigan is this?
Hey, nah, we can get 4 TV timeouts with the halves. We can get that money right. Get the Cinderella stories, you know what I mean? You gotta be sounding corporate. I don't like this. I don't like how this worked.
Not Stephen Cole Jones Jr. That's crazy.
All right.
Hey, man, I'm just asking questions. Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, let's end with this one since we are approaching the time crunch. This is from Elon. Hello and greetings from Norway. I really enjoy your podcast, especially that you talk about both the NBA and the WNBA, and that it is very insightful and not in an audio version of bad Twitter takes and clickbait hot takes. I would love to hear what you think about the Philadelphia situation and the Embiid comments about wanting to win a championship somewhere. I have heard a lot of people talk about poor Embiid and the chaos in Philadelphia the past years, and I haven't heard anyone talk about what role he plays in that. I should mention I am not a huge fan. Well, that's an important disclaimer in this. I don't think he was the MVP last season, and the narrative of him having to win it because it was unfair if Jokic has 3 and he has none was stupid. The most valuable player should win it, and if it happens to be Jokic 3 years in a row, then so be it. If anything, I think Luka had a better argument the season before last, when the narrative was that Jokic's supporting cast was injured, while Luka took the Mavs to a better season without that same talent on the team at all. Anyways, I digress. As a player myself, the teams that have performed the best and where it was the most fun to play are the teams where everyone works for a common goal and no one makes it about themselves. Looking at it from the outside, it seems that the whole Philadelphia organization has had to spend the last years running an MVP campaign for Embiid, having to listen to him complain about not winning it, rather than taking responsibility for not having gotten further in the playoffs or the fact that he has disappeared at the end of important games himself. Yes, some injury bad luck too, but his playoff stats versus regular season stats are not exactly ideal versus other star players. Feel free to read this as another mention of the greatness of Luka and Jokic. Okay. I know the Ben Simmons situation is unique, and I am no fan of Harden and his antics the past years either, but to what extent do you guys think that maybe Embiid has been creating an environment that hasn't added value to the team, where everyone pulls together toward a common goal other than his MVP PR campaign? Woo!
Straight heat from Norway.
Okay.
Side note, salute to Norway. All right. Hey.
A lot of embracing of the bounce across the globe. We really do appreciate y'all.
Like, I do appreciate that. That's kind of wild, like, to get a Joel Embiid take from Norway.
Yeah. This is a global game, and this is a global pod. It's fire.
Got to think about that for a second. I can't go there with Embiid. I don't want to say, hey, it's not his fault. But I don't necessarily, my brain doesn't go to, hey, this is Embiid who created this environment. I think we've seen the guy play through way too many injuries to go to that portion. I think we've seen him improve his game too much to go to that portion. I think we've seen him be too important for that team on both ends of the floor. Like, remember, this is, would you say these last 2 years, or at least last year, maybe one of his worst defensive years? Would you feel that way? Or his lesser defensive years?
I feel like last year, I feel like it was one of the more impressive ones, and that's with, like, the wonky start for him before getting, like, the injury context. But, like, I think just in terms of the cast that he had to, quote-unquote, carry for the year, for that to be a top 10 defense, like, I have last season pretty high up. I think he's had better individual seasons. But I think last year would count as, like, one of the higher ones. Maybe the year before last, where it gets kind of, compared to his level, like, still good, but...
Giving you that level of defense while also giving you that level of offense on a nightly basis and creating and improving. It's double teams. Like, I think the Brooklyn series where he literally said, hey, oh, you guys are doubling. I'm going to make every pass. Oh, they're making shots. Oh, you guys stop doubling. I'm going to punish you immediately. Like, for me, I'm just kind of like, I'm not going Taylor Swift with Joel Embiid right now. I don't think the problem is him. I understand if you're looking at what? 5 years of second round losses, right? And it's like, well,
at some point,
maybe it's him. But I think nailing the number 2 would make it look a little bit different for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's never felt like it's super tension outside of Waves Arms Wild. Waves, yeah. What say you?
This is a fun question, one, to just read, but two, like, to think through, because for me, like, I've had a very interesting, like, relationship with, like, Embiid takes throughout his career. So for me, it was trying to parse through, like, these are things, and these are things that could be detrimental to the common goal of, like, winning a title. Like, Embiid missing games. Embiid has been hurt. He has gotten injured plenty throughout his career. He has missed time. He has played through injury, etc. Him being hurt has affected his level in the playoffs, and his level dropping in the playoffs is a big factor in why Philadelphia has not advanced in the third round. Like, that is, like, in a very literal sense, like, that is true. Then it's like, okay, so this is true, but do we just blame a dude for being hurt? Like, I don't, like, no, not really. Like, yes, you got hurt, and yes, you being hurt made things worse for your team. I don't think that's, like, a personal indictment. Like, he's a seven-footer that's asked to do a lot, that started playing basketball late, and started his career with, like, foot stuff. Like, no, like, it's not fair to, like, blame him. Even if in, like, a literal sense, like, yeah, this hinders the goal. I think in terms of skill set, you mentioned the growth that Embiid has shown, and I'm with you. One of the central questions I had about Joel Embiid as he grew into a dominant number one option and Philadelphia's making this leap from, okay, they're out of the process to, holy crap, this team wants to win, et cetera, et cetera. One of the questions I had was, like, on a fundamental level, okay, can a back-to-back skit center be your number one option on a title team in this NBA? And, like, that question wasn't exclusive to Embiid, but, like, he felt like the high end at that point as he was, like, really rising to prominence. And it's like, okay, the league has changed. This is more guard slash wing heavy. Like, spacing, versatility, tempo, et cetera, is very important in today's NBA. Can you win it with Embiid? And one of the questions I had about that in terms of Embiid was like, okay, he's a dominant enough scorer to draw two. Can he pass well enough to beat it? And I think he has shown lots of growth as a passer out of double teams over the past two, three seasons. But, like, one, like, with that growth, has it reached the threshold necessary? I'm not sure yet. I don't think it's a firm yes or no. I'm not sure yet. And then two, again, independent of Embiid, if he draws a double, who is he passing it to? Because throughout his Philadelphia tenure, how many teams have had great spacing for him? Like, the best, like, shooting tempo team that I can think of in this Embiid era was the team in which Embiid missed time and then Ben Simmons lost his mind for like 2 months or a month or whatever it was. And it's him and Marco Bellinelli and all that good stuff. And like, even then, overall, that team wasn't like super great in spacing. And Ben Simmons was a big part of that. So like, on that front, it's just like, well, I don't really blame Embiid for not being Jokic as a passer. Because like, one, nobody's Jokic as a passer. But two, it's easier to shrink the floor against Embiid because of who he's playing with. And then you get James Harden in the fold, and he's an elite shooter. And we've been talking on this pod, and others have been talking for years, like, oh, James just doesn't take catch and shoot threes anymore. So like, even that, let's use Harden as the entry passer, keeping one passer away. If you double off of Harden, it's a problem. You don't even know if Harden's going to take that shot. And so it's like, okay, maybe Embiid isn't at the passing threshold, but yet is the shooting talent as a way that makes it easier for Embiid? I don't think so. Then you factor in the injuries. It's like, okay, yeah, this sucks, but like, is it really his fault? I just find myself in a loop with Embiid, where he's very obviously a top five, top six player in the league at worst. He was a worthy MVP winner, in my opinion. There are some fundamental questions about like his archetype, and it's even unfair to call him like back to basket center based on all the face up work that he does. But it's just like a weird loop with like, I don't know if it's fair to blame him. And I think all the conversations that, not all of them in a literal sense, but like a lot of the conversations that I've had when it gets into Embiid has to take ownership, it just kind of leaves it at, well, his stats drop and he gets hurt. It's like, okay, yeah, those two are connected. What does Embiid do to change that? Embiid, you need to wake up in the morning and tell your body, stay healthy or else. And now he's playing 75 games and we don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, that's not how it works. Like, I point more to the context than Embiid. I think it's fair to say he's not 100% blameless, but I don't know how far the actual blame percentage should go for him. Does that make sense? I feel like I just rambled, but.
No, you good.
That's kind of where I landed on that front. Okay. Do you have free throws?
Yes.
Ah, I also have free throws. I only have a few, so I can go first if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
All righty. Well, let's get into some free throws to close things out. Who do you trust more, D'Angelo Russell or Dwayne Wade in the cube?
D'Angelo Russell.
Tough. Okay. We will stick with the Dwayne Wade theme. Dwayne Wade or James Harden all time?
Oh, that's disgusting work from you. I have Eurostepped this debate this entire time, and you brought it to the pod on free throws. Combination.
No. Absolutely not. Oh, man. Absolutely not. We need your actual answer, good sir. Great shot, but absolutely not.
What's up, James?
Okay, well then. My follow-up question is going to be Dwayne Wade or James Harden offensively?
What's up, James?
I see. Okay. Sticking with shooting guards, Tyler Hero or Kevin Herter?
Give me Tyler.
Okay, very cool. Rank these in the order of the disrespect that they feel that they get. Paul Pierce, Tracy McGrady, the Connecticut Sun.
I'm going to go with the Sun 1, T-Mac 2, Paul Pierce 3.
Okay, got you.
One of them is looking for flowers more than anything else.
I see. There's a joke there, but I will slide on past. Are you team Sim Nation or team Meta?
I'm team just play the game. Just play the game. I don't know how to do left, right, cheese, so I don't do it. Can you hoop or not? Why y'all sound like uncles and teenagers talking about crossovers and jab steps? Just play the game.
It could all be so simple. What percentage of our dunkers do you believe remember Donyell Marshall?
37%.
Oh, okay. All right. Who's getting signed first? Christian Wood or Dalvin Cook?
Dalvin Cook.
All right. Last question I have. did Kyle Anderson take the meme too literally?
No. I have free throws. James Harden is speaking on Damian Lillard train rumors. Is the world okay?
No, it is not.
Okay. Charles Barkley has released his four contenders.
Oh,
the boy. Nuggets, the Sixers, the Lakers, and the Celtics. Do you agree?
No. I think that's missing like two or three teams. No. Actually.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. Who do you believe in more, Charles Barkley with a polo or Stephen A. Smith with a sleeveless hoodie?
The answer is a firm no.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right. We are almost in August. Who is planning to renew their vows secretly more, Portland or Philadelphia?
I guess my bet is on Philly, but oh, Lord.
More surprising Bradley Beal quote, that he was surprised that Phoenix was going to trade for him because why would they trade Devin Booker, or that he wants to be one of the best two-way players in the league this year?
More surprising?
Yeah.
Definitely the first one. Because, like, brother, okay. You had to know. Like, I get the general point that's being made. That's not to be taken, like, literally. I understand that. But, like, also, brother, you had to know.
Tracy McGrady said Victor is just bull bull. How did that make you feel?
Bad. It made me feel bad, Steve.
Okay. Tracy McGrady said he watches more college hoops than pros because they shoot so many threes. Do you believe him? Does he know he had a very legendary pull up three in transition?
Brother, you were this is hurts my heart. As I've said on this pod and on my timeline, I've said very many times, Tracy McGrady is my favorite player of all time. And the post-career commentary over the last few years has just been like, I pretend I do not see it, or it's just the DW meme. Like, this sign can't stop me because I can't read. No.
All right. Who are you more proud of this summer? Chris Paul after the Jeff Teague story or Tracy McGrady?
It's probably Chris Paul.
Oh, dang. Speaking of that, what do you think there is more of? people who watch Jeff Teague hoop who are surprised at his podcasting abilities, or people who found these clips and are finding out Jeff Teague could hoop.
It's probably the latter, which stinks because like Jeff Teague was good at his peak. But yeah, it's probably the latter.
Okay. I guess. Have you seen Nikola Jokic with a shirt on since the finals?
I have not. No, he is having himself a grand old time.
Salute to that man. That first time out in the Denver home game gonna hit. Zach Randolph said that Ja Morant's going to be okay. I talked to him earlier this summer. Did you need to hear anything else before believing this? And have you believed in anything more than that?
No and no. It is fixed.
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or Kyle Anderson?
Kyle Anderson.
Okay, final one for me. Nathaniel Hackett, he has to fight Sean Payton, right?
Yes, yes, he does. He sure does. Don't let anybody do you like that. Yes. Put the paws on that man. You can't do that. You got to draw a line in the sand at some point.
Oh, it's going to go from Dunker Nation, let's ride, to Bronco Nation, let's slide. Bop, bop, bop.
Man said he couldn't hack it. That's tough. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there and or sharing tweets that we don't want to react to on our natural timeline. So come have some fun. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having a blast in there. Naturally watching primarily WNBA hoops, having fun with this season. We are also watching whatever else comes on, watching some wrestling. We'll be tapped in for SmackDown, I would imagine, on Friday. We're watching some wrestling, reality television. We're doing some YouTube content. We're just watching random videos, or we're doing like 2K streams, FIFA streams, doing a little bit of everything. They watched me play Wreck the other night. It was an experience. So yeah, just come have some fun with us. The link to the watch party should be hyperlinked in the podcast description. You just click on that. It is free, no shenanigans. And if it's not hyperlinked, then just copy and paste the link into your browser and sign up. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans whatsoever. Come rock with us. Come have some fun. Very lighthearted, basketball-loving, inclusive community. So like, if you fit those things, come have some fun. Come rock with us. And with that, we will be back next week.
Well, we're going to talk about that James Harden or D-Wade question. You threw at me, buddy.